Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. You can keep your Silicon Valley. The tech industry is heading north. Hi, friends. Welcome to day three of our innovation article for June. Quantum Leap of Faith continues today, June 22nd, with me, Naomi, and Josh and Amanda back in the studio with you. Now, we have covered quite a lot of information, some of which is a little bit complicated. So congratulations on keeping up so far. Josh, what have we learned about so far?
Well, we've talked about an interesting man, Mike Lazaridis, who was the founder of BlackBerry, and he has committed lots of time and quite a bit of money to the future of quantum computing.
Okay. Now, quantum computing, it certainly sounds exciting, but trying to explain it was a little bit complicated yesterday.
Yes, but I think the article did a great job of helping us out to do that. I think that last example that we had about the keys that you talked about, Naomi, was very helpful. I know, especially for myself, that really helped click it into place,
yes,
so to speak. Just knowing that the old style computing would take one key at a time, but with quantum computing, you can put all keys in at the same time to unlock the lock.
Right. So instead of each tiny little transistor going to one or zero and going by bits, you know, I mean, computers, they're faster than ever, but they still can seem a little slow sometimes.
That's true. And sometimes it's the processing speed. Other times it's just the internet where the data is traveling across. And that is one of the barriers to microcomputing and quantum computing, is that our infrastructure isn't quite ready for the speeds that we're talking about.
It often happens with innovation, where something new comes along and it's pushing those boundaries. Sometimes, for instance, there's a player on the market and you don't even know where to categorize it because you think, well, this doesn't really fit into what we have.
That's right. Google's working hard on driverless cars, but we're not quite ready yet to allow a computer to drive our vehicles for us.
Right. It sort of makes me think of, you know, certain sports where someone comes along who's just so far ahead for some reason of everyone else in the category that you start to think, well, where can they compete? How can they be in a system that's fair, that really does show their talent and let them do their best possible work? In the case of quantum computing, we're just not there yet.
We are not there yet. But let's hope that with the introduction of quantum computing, it will make the other industries step up to the challenge of meeting quantum computing.
Right. We discussed yesterday about how, you know, a quantum computer could basically break the internet at this point.
Mm. That would be sad.
Yes. We don't want them to do more damage than
We learned a good phrase yesterday. It would wreak havoc. It would cause confusion and chaos across the internet. As well, something I didn't bring up, but I read about the storage problem that we would have. I think many of our listeners have external hard drives that they keep their movies and music on, and you can buy a terabyte of data, a drive with a terabyte of data for not too much money these days. You would need 500 times the amount of a terabyte of data. I mean, just an incredible amount of storage capacity.
Right. I have to be honest that for me, as your average computer user, I kind of forget that there's still a physical aspect to some of this. You know, you store everything on the cloud, and it seems sort of magical, like it just floats in the air somewhere. But that's not really true.
That is not really true. We also learn that, you know, computers will do amazing things. You know, they will cover amazing discoveries, whether it be in pharmaceuticals or also with digital security.
Right. But we still do need some hardware for all that. You know, this isn't just a matter of technology. There's also the practical side. You know, this, it has to happen physically somewhere too.
And maybe that's why it's happening in Canada. You have lots of open space there, right, Naomi?
There is a lot of geography in Canada, a lot of real estate that has not really been claimed yet. So plenty of space to build some of those buildings that I hear about where, and actually we have done articles on this as well when we've talked about cloud computing, that you do need sort of big warehouses full of servers to store all this info.
That's right. Google's built some in Asia, and I'm guessing big data centers are coming to Ontario.
Right. And that brings us to one of the key points of this article, which is a tech boom in Canada.
That's right. What will we see happen? I think that's what we're going to be learning more about today, right?
Right. We've been discussing some of the progress. We had a great little graphic showing just how much money is being made in this area. And, of course, it is a bit of a surprise. We're used to thinking technology, California. Technology, Asia. We don't think technology and Canada in the same sentence.
No. Maple syrup, natural gas, definitely, but not tech startups. And that's a graphic we talked about yesterday. How many tech startups are calling Waterloo home? And just last year, the total now is 450 of them.
Right. So there are more companies growing in this region, Waterloo, close to Toronto in Ontario, Canada. Let's find out more about it as we begin our reading on page 36 today.
The North heats up. It's worth noting that not everyone in Waterloo has qubits on the mind. The region has been enjoying a small-scale tech boom, fueled by UWaterloo graduates and a growing ecosystem of more conventional tech firms. Concurrently, entrepreneurs are increasingly setting up shop in the area, says Ian Klugman, CEO of Communitech, an outfit that promotes and tracks the region's tech startups. Activity is at an all-time high. It's absolutely exploding. To Klugman, Lazaritis-led endeavors like Perimeter or IQC are invaluable magnets for talent. In recent years, both organizations have attracted top scholars from MIT and Cambridge. Thus, there's a potential for kinetic reaction. First, you get the best people. Then you get the best students. Already, there are signs this is happening. Something is going on in Waterloo, says Y Combinator founder Paul Graham, because the applications we get from Waterloo students are better than those we get from students of any other university.
Now, I love the subtitle that we start off with here, The North Heats Up. It's kind of a joke.
Yes, because it's very cold in this part of Canada. A lot of Canada, it's very cold. And we do call that part of the world the North.
Right. Mm. Actually, Waterloo's in one of the warmest parts of Canada, and it's still very cold. Lots of snowy months throughout the year. How is it heating up?
Well, we're talking here about the fact that there is a tech boom. It says it's worth noting that not everyone in Waterloo has qubits on the mind. So not everyone is thinking about quantum computing. Other things are happening in the area as well.
Right. On the mind, sometimes we say on the brain. You know, we say, oh, I have this on the brain. I'm sorry, I was, you know, working on this project all day and it's on my brain. It's on my mind. So not everyone in this area is so concerned about quantum computing.
No, it's now also a small tech boom going on in other parts of technology. And when you have a boom, it means that there's tremendous growth in a certain area. I think of California having in the gold rush was certainly a boom in the 1840s when people were moving west to look for gold.
Okay, so that region has been enjoying that smaller scale tech boom. It's not quite to the extent that we've seen it in the past in other places. But how has this been coming about?
Well, it says it's fueled by UWaterloo graduates. So fueled by means to be sustained by. It means that these graduates from university are needing jobs and they're joining the technology industry in that area. It says it's also because of a growing ecosystem of more conventional tech firms.
Okay.
And an ecosystem is when plants and animals and people are all living together, sharing resources and contributing to an environment of cohabitation. And companies do that as well. I think I talked about this on the first day, where a large company or a university is in an area and it needs support. It needs graduates. It needs teachers. It needs benefactors. And those people all work together to create an ecosystem.
Right. Of course, this is a tale as old as time. I mean, anywhere where you start a business, every other business follows, you know. If you set up a trading post, then, you know, there's going to be a restaurant across the street. Mm-hmm. Like, that's how it works. That's where the people are. And so it's the same idea here, but maybe a little more specific to the tech industry. Concurrently, we see in line five. So that just means at the same time, going on at the same time. What's happening?
Entrepreneurs are increasingly setting up shop. So people starting businesses or new businesses are also coming into the area and establishing their businesses.
Exactly. So everything is growing. When one part of the economy starts to boom, other things tend to follow. And this is according to Ian Klugman. He's the CEO of a company, an outfit called Communitech. They're promoting and tracking the region's tech startups. So they're paying attention to where these businesses are popping up.
Yes, they are the ones that produce the graphic on page 35. So they're tracking how many companies are starting in the region. Are they growing? Are they contributing to the economy? And how much money are they making?
And what's his comment about it?
Well, he says activity is at an all-time high. And that's a phrase we read a lot about in the news when there's research studies or polls being done. Maybe the Dow Jones Industrial Average reached an all-time high. That means in the history of the Dow Jones, which tracks 30 stocks in the stock market, it's never been higher.
Right. And this doesn't just apply to trade and so on. We could also say, for instance, crime is at an all-time high, to use it in a negative way. Or, you know, they're checking and they say, oh, the birth rate is at an all-time high. More people are having kids. So he says it's absolutely exploding.
Right. And that means that it's taking off. It doesn't mean that it literally is exploding. It just means that it is doing very well, or at a very fast pace, it is taking off.
So this is positive in this case.
Very positive.
Imploding would be bad, but yes. Exploding is very good.
Good. So in line 11, we continue, and Klugman has some ideas about what all of this means.
Right. We go back to Lazaridis-led endeavors like Perimeter or IQC in the mind of Klugman are invaluable magnets for talent. And so when you have an endeavor, it just means something that you're leading, an initiative, or something that you have started that you're hoping goes well.
Okay. So all of these things are invaluable magnets for talent. We've talked about these two places, the Perimeter and as well as that IQC, just both being places where a lot of research is happening. But they're important for another reason.
Right. We see in the next the rest of the sentence that in recent years, both Perimeter and IQC have actually attracted top scholars from places like MIT and Cambridge. So they're very top-class universities.
Right. So internationally, when you think of, you know, the most successful, the brightest minds, the best and the brightest, the cream of the crop, you think of places like MIT and Cambridge and not Waterloo.
No, MIT definitely has produced hundreds and thousands of startups in the area, specifically from this reason of bringing so many smart scientific minds to the campus. And it's the MIT stands for the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
So if Waterloo is actually getting people from that area to come to them, that's saying something about what's going on there.
That's right. It really is saying that they are making some progress and people are taking notice.
Right. And it means that there's some potential for something.
Yes. A kinetic reaction there at line 15. And if something is kinetic, it has motion or movement to it. You think of kinetic energy, meaning the motion that you create with your body or a train speeding by. And so now when smart minds are coming together and thinking about big, deep topics like quantum computing, we have things happening.
Right. So what specifically is his idea of this kinetic reaction?
Well, he says first you get the best people, then you get the best students. Because when you have the best people, the students are going to want to know, oh, where are they, so that they too can progress and have maybe mentors or a goal of being like those people. So they're going to go where they are.
Definitely. This is a great motivation for people. If you really have a goal and a dream, then you want to work with the people who've succeeded in that field.
Right. And it's happened in other areas, too. It's not just Boston or London that have these. Redmond, Washington has had a big boom, and because of Microsoft being headquartered there. And then University of Washington has grown its scientific department and become an esteemed educational institute because of the fact that so many smart people came to work for Bill Gates.
Mm. So, Amanda, is this happening in Waterloo?
It says already there are signs this is happening. We hear from a founder of Y Combinator, Paul Graham. He said, something is going on in Waterloo.
Ooh, sounds mysterious.
It does. There's something happening in that city. Why does he say that?
He said, because the applications we get from Waterloo students are better than those we get from students of any other university.
So this is from a guy who hires for his firm, and he's looking at all the people who apply, and he says, the best come from Waterloo. Mm-hmm. Again, very significant evidence that something is happening here.
That's right.
Okay, so the North is heating up. Let's find out what the next step will be in our final reading for today.
Looking to the future. Admittedly, it's too early to start packing for the Great White North. The race to build a quantum computer is a global competition, just like the race to build the next Silicon Valley. So you could dismiss Lazaridis' vision as intriguing and ambitious, and ultimately a long shot. Still, he insists Waterloo is only halfway through an evolution that will take another 10 or 20 years. But the notion that a single person can help a city cultivate a global startup culture is hardly far-fetched. Palo Alto was mainly apricot orchards until a Stanford official named Frederick Terman began wooing tech companies in the 1950s to work near campus. Lazaridis has absorbed that lesson, and really, he's had nuttier ideas before. A while back, he believed that at some point in the future, everyone would be walking around with a smartphone.
So as we look to the future, well, how promising is this really? Should we all move to Waterloo, Josh?
It's a little early, it says, to start packing for the Great White North. The quantum computer race has really just begun.
Okay, so admittedly, we say. So in other words, sort of, well, to be honest, we have to confess, we have to admit that maybe we shouldn't all move to Canada yet.
Right. We're in the early stages. It's only just begun. And so we can still keep an eye on it and just see how we're going. But we learned that the quantum computer race is a global competition.
Okay. This has come up a couple of times. Just like the race to build the next Silicon Valley, this is competitive. And in fact, just above our reading, it talks about that stiff competition.
It says, in the race to build a quantum computer, there are other players. France and Germany are among the leaders, and IBM and Yale both have dedicated labs.
Okay, so it's not just Waterloo that has the edge here, but it does seem pretty intriguing, pretty fascinating to look at. You could, though, dismiss Lazaridis' vision.
That's right. We learned that you could dismiss it as intriguing and ambitious and possibly ultimately a long shot. Now, when we say something is a long shot, we mean that it may have an unsuccessful outcome.
So some people might dismiss his vision. They might just say, oh, it doesn't matter. It's not that important. We have these three ways to describe it. You talked about it might be a long shot, but still people do think it's also
fascinating, intriguing and fascinating, maybe a little bit ambitious, like he's thinking too far ahead of himself, and also maybe ultimately it may not work out the way he wants.
Right. So we look at this and we might think all of these things. Okay. Exciting, fascinating, great. This seems impossible. It's too far ahead. Other people will catch up first.
Right. Show me your next great smartphone. I don't need to hear about a computer that's 20 or 30 years away from impacting my life.
Right. Mm. So thank you for the information, but let's move back to the smartphone issue.
I mean, I think it would take... I know scientists that are working things that are, you know, years and years out. I don't personally think I have the patience. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to see maybe not instant gratification, but at least some progress I'm making in the near term on something that I'm working on.
Right. So if you're interested in this field, it might not be a field where you could, for instance, make a lot of money yet.
That's right.
For some time. And if you were thinking of investing, well, you might have to wait a while for a return on that.
Right. It would be a long-term investment because we see that he insists Waterloo is only halfway through. And so he's saying this kind of transition or transformation takes a long time.
Right. But his statement, it's kind of hopeful, actually. He's not saying, hey, you know, this is never going to happen, so just let's try it anyway. He's saying, no, it's getting there. It's just going to take a while.
I wonder if he still has more money to put at this, or have they already burned through his $250 million endowment. But it says it'll take another 10 or 20 years until we see what are the fruits of his labor.
Okay. Now, this final paragraph is a pretty fascinating one. A few people might look at this and they say, okay, that's pretty interesting, but this is really focused on this one guy, mm-hmm. Mike Lazaridis. I mean, we've been hearing about him the whole time. It's all his money. That seems a little unrealistic, doesn't it?
Right. I mean, I think a lot of people would think, you know, can one person, a single person, one individual really change a whole city?
Right. And what does our article say?
Well, it's happened before. It says that we meet a man who did that exact thing. He was the man who helped cultivate a startup culture in, a small little town in California called Palo Alto.
Okay. So the notion or the idea that just one person can help a city cultivate a global startup culture is hardly far-fetched. A lot of words in there.
Right. We see, but the notion, but the idea that one person can create or develop this kind of startup culture is not necessarily too hard to believe.
Right. If something's far-fetched, it's like you can't even imagine it. It's too crazy. But they're saying, no, not necessarily. This idea of a global startup culture, when we talk about the culture of a city, we're kind of talking about its character, what it's known for.
Yeah, the people that come there, why they're there, what they're all working on. And it does, it's the way companies work together. They all come there with the same mission. It might not be all doing the same thing, but there has been a culture that did breed companies like Facebook and Twitter all came from the same, almost the same street in Silicon Valley.
Right. The example that, again, we'll come back to is Palo Alto.
That's right. It was actually in an apricot orchard where a Stanford official named Frederick Terman began this company.
Right. He actually began wooing tech companies, and that's a fun word. Actually, it has a lot of romantic and connotations, ideas to it. If you woo someone, you're trying to convince them to sort of join you, come with you on an adventure or, you know, be your boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever.
It's right. And he did that back in the 50s. I didn't even realize that Silicon Valley had been created so long ago. And he was bringing these companies saying, come, we'll support you as a university. We'll fill your halls with smart scientists that graduate from our school. And Lazaridis has absorbed that same lesson.
Right. He paid attention to the fact that this can happen. He absorbed it. He took it in and he moved forward from that knowledge. Well, before we wrap up, I want to hear the conclusion from yesterday's feature.
You ask me why I want to move to Canada? Well, one reason, Mike Lazaridis.
Mike who?
Mike Lazaridis, the co-founder of Research in Motion, or RIM, the makers of the BlackBerry smartphone. He was there during the nascent period when PDAs evolved.
Oh, yes. RIM is headquartered near Toronto. So, you want to work for them?
No, I want to work in a technology area that Mike Lazaridis is developing in Waterloo, Ontario, which is 70 miles southwest of Toronto. It's creating a boom in the tech industry.
Well, you don't have any experience in technology, so it seems like a long shot to me.
Actually, I've been taking classes at night at City University. I'm studying quantum computing, which is exactly the field that this new technology area is focusing on.
Wow, that's great, Jill. I'm impressed that you've been so proactive about changing your career. I believe it portends great things for you in the near future.
Thanks, Jack. I appreciate your support.
I'm sure she'll have a long career ahead of her in quantum computing. Now back to Mike Lazaridis. He has absorbed this lesson of working with the university to create a culture within a city. And we conclude in a really fun way.
Right. We learned that, starting this kind of culture in a different place is not the nuttiest idea he's ever had.
A nutty idea?
It means being crazy or having a crazy idea or what some may seem as ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. What was his previous nutty idea?
Oh, way back, maybe in the early 90s, he had a vision that we would all walk around with smartphones.
No way.
And it is hard to believe that, yes, even 15 years ago, we all lived pretty happy lives without being connected 24 hours a day to a phone.
And it was people like Mike Lazaridis who went ahead and, you know, they were bold enough to say, no, I believe everyone will buy one of these. And even, 3 years ago, I wasn't convinced that everyone would have a smartphone. And now it seems like you just can't fight it.
That's right. We really are walking around with a smartphone.
It's our third hand. It's just permanently connected.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am really excited to hear from all of you, friends, what you thought about this article. Maybe you're considering a career in Waterloo, or maybe you've been there and you have some information to share with everyone else. Let us know your thoughts on quantum computing and its future at our Facebook page or at studioclassroom.com. And come back soon for another great lesson here on Advanced. Until then, this is Naomi,
Josh,
and Amanda
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.